I want to welcome you to the new Drag Champ Show. The three amigos are leading this show, none other than Jake Hodge, Mr. Hoodrich, Ryan Gleghorn, and Gary Don Free, Mr. Drag Champ himself. Now, I wouldn't ride to the store with these three yahoos, but you put them together for some good old stories, some racing news, some results from all over the world. Now, that's a party you just don't want to miss. So, let's tune in, let's hang on, and let's get it on. I want to welcome you to the Drag Champ Show.
So with us on the Drag Champ Show this evening is a former NHRA Super Comp World Champion, former IHRA Division Champion, and the current IHRA Division 4 and I believe Division 7 and 2 Director?
4, 6, and 7.
4, 6, and 7.
Yeah. I have been Division 2 and Division 5 at one point, so yeah.
Gotcha. Frank Kohotek, how you doing, bud?
I'm hanging in there, man. Hanging in there. I woke up this morning, so that was a good start.
Yeah. I mean, for as old as you are, that's pretty good.
When you get my age, you're just very, very happy to wake up.
Yeah. Which, you don't show your age very well.
That's because he hides in the tower.
Oh, yeah. No, like, even out and about, like, he told me how old he was at the million. I was like, oh, my goodness. I had no idea. Like, I know you've been around forever, but there's a bunch of people who've been around forever. They're still... You know,
well, you know, when you hang out in the tower with the announcers that I have to deal with, it gets you old, makes you look older quicker.
Yeah, I bet you work in the world finals must get to you every year because I know you're not talking about any of the races I'm involved in.
No, I'm talking about you and Jake.
Well, that's funny. I just got Ryan
me into using my golf cart for a golf cart race. I thought I might win some money. Instead, I had to buy new brakes for it and a windshield
because he threw his kid through it. Yeah,
yeah, that's been all over Facebook.
Yeah, you should have called the cops on child abuse just to, you know, kind of offset some cost or something.
It's no big deal. You guys are all right.
Yes, for those that didn't know, that was Frank Kohotek's golf cart. Actually, it was Tammy's golf cart, which makes it even worse.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even tell her that you were racing it until it was afterwards.
Yeah, I went to the motorhome and said, oh, yeah, Frank said I could borrow this. She said, okay, let me get my stuff off of it. Which is a good thing. She got it out of harm's way.
Yeah, because they were flying objects at the finish line on that one.
Yep, I seen the video.
We all did. In slow motion. Oh. Jake hangs his head every time that story comes up. He just looks down and shakes his head.
So I want to know what got you to the director role. I know that you've been involved in racing for longer than Ryan and I have been alive, but how did that come about?
Well, I was actually I was running NHRA and IHRA at the time, chasing both deals. It was 2000. I want to say like maybe 2000-2001. And I met with Phil Gingrich at Lone Star, which was in Sealy, and I sat down and talked to him, and I was like, you know, I'd be interested in working for IHRA if, you know, the opportunity ever came about. He's like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want your job. And he's like, well, that's funny that you should mention that because I'm about to retire from this job. But I go, really? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, I mean, you know, throw my hat in the ring and see what happens. And so, you know, that's kind of where it ended. I sent in my resume, never heard anything from anybody. And then I was working at Redline at the time, and Tom Crager showed up for a track visit. He was our IHRA, I'm not even sure what you call him now, but he was the guy that went through all the tracks. And so he shows up at Redline and said, hey, I'm with IHRA, and I'd like you to show me around the facility. And I was like, sure. So he jumped on the golf cart, and we rode around. I showed him everything, and he was like, you know, we're really trying to build IHRA. Do you have any ideas? And so, of course, me being who I am, I've just like blasted his ass. I was like, well, here's the problem, you know.
And here's where you're fucking up.
Yeah, I just laid it out all on the line, and he was like, you know, you got some pretty good views. Have you ever thought about coming to work for IHRA? And I go, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I actually did send in a resume, and I flew out to Rockingham and met with Bill Bader, and I never heard anything back. And he goes, really? Well, what's your name? And so I told him, I says, Frank Kohotek. He goes, you're not going to believe this. And I go, what? He goes, I have your resume in the car. And since I was in Texas, I was going to actually call you tomorrow and see if we could set up a meeting. And I go, really? And he's like, yeah. So that's kind of how it all came about. He got a hold of Scooter. I flew up to Ohio and met with Scooter and Crager. And, you know, that was, shoot, I don't know, 17 years ago. Been with them ever since. I've had two or three opportunities to be an NHRA division director. Craig Hutchison called and offered me his job when he quit. And I turned it down. I was offered this division.
Wish you wouldn't have done that.
I turned around the 6 and 7 division director job. Well, they offered me 7 first and then 6 and then 4. And then both times I said no. But if 4 ever came available, I'd be interested. Well, so be it. Craig's retiring. He calls me. He said, okay, well, you got your wish. I'm retiring, you can have my job. And I was like, dude, I can't do that. I just, what do you mean? And I was like, everything that you guys are is against everything I believe. I'm not interested. So, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'm very happy with IHRA. They've always treated me well. I actually have a voice. If I want to do something or say something, or, you know, they listen. Where if I was with the NHRA, it would just be swept under the rug. So,
yeah, that tends to happen a lot. There's like 3 voices that matter, and the rest are just, you know, murmurs.
Yep.
I've seen the behind the scenes part of that.
I mean, honestly, even today, I still get people calling me, want me to take Trey's job. I don't want Trey's job. I'll be honest with you.
Trey doesn't want Trey's job.
he used to work for IHRA. He was a tech guy in IHRA. And I'm happy where I'm at. I'm happy with the people that I have. And no, we're not NHRA. We don't have John Force. But, you know, I'm a sportsman racer myself. And I think what we do is really what's best for sportsman racing. So
NHRA didn't have John Force this year either.
No, they didn't.
since we're just throwing stones everywhere tonight, but what were some of the other things? I mean, obviously you have a voice at IHRA and it's a sportsman friendly organization, but what were some of the other factors that kind of keep you at IHRA versus NHRA?
Well, I would say most of the people that work for IHRA are former racers or have a racing background. So they understand, you know, they can actually read a freaking time slip, you know, when a guy brings it to the tower. I'm not too sure that there's very many people in the NHRA organization that could actually understand what a time slip says and what it does. So, and I'm not really bashing NHRA. I'm just saying they are business people. They're not they don't understand. And, you know, I was at the Houston race the year that we ran 2 rounds of elimination, and it rained and they canceled us and told us to go home and said they would give us a credit for a national event. I guess that was 2012, and said, you know, you'll have a credit for a national event anywhere you want to go. But this race never happened. And I'm like, I've never heard of that. How do you unring the bell? You ran rounds of eliminations and the race never happened.
Yeah, but we sat there in the rain for 3 or 4 days too, waiting for that call.
Oh, I know. And then if you were there, you heard them. They announced you can't leave. And if you leave, you know, you're going to be subject to fine and.
Oh, yeah.
And I fired my motor. I called my boss, but at that time was, my president, Aaron Polburn. I called him and I was like, hey, I'm here at Houston. And they canceled the event. They told us we can't leave. And if we leave, we're going to get fined. And I said, I don't want to cause a shitstorm because I'm an IHRA division director. But, I mean, what are your thoughts? He goes, if you want to leave, you leave. He goes, if they fine you, send me the bill, I'll pay it. I was like, okay.
Hell, half of us couldn't leave because we were buried in the mud.
Oh, well, yeah. I got out, though. I was fortunate. I was parked out there, down there by the time slips in the mud, but I got out. So. But, yeah, you know, that was right after they offered me that job, and I was, like, so thankful that I never took that job because if that would have happened and I would have been working there, I would have got fired, because that was the most wrong answer they could have ever come up with. And I still believe that today.
Yeah,
it
that
worked
was a
out
strange
for me, though. I used my entry from that race and paid the extra money and entered the U.S. Nationals and won it in 2013. So it all worked out.
Attaboy.
Yeah. I mean, would you rather win Houston or would you rather win Indy?
Oh, by far. Well, I already won Houston, so yeah, Indy was. Yeah. That was my bucket list. There's,
shut the fuck up.
You know, go ahead.
Huh? Go ahead. One thing on my bucket list I never got to do in NHRA is double up at a national event. I won and runner up, but I never doubled like the Edmonds and Tommy Phillips and, you know, those guys. I always wanted to do that, but I got close. I won and runner up. And then the year I won the national championship, I came back and finished with a number two spot. I missed it by two rounds. Ed Richardson won it that year. And he was in one track and I was at the other. And we were matching each other round to round. And whoever went the furthest that year won the championship. And he ended up winning it. So great, great, great deal, though. I was happy.
You know, it's funny that we start talking about national events and you winning them. Your first national event win, it wasn't like you won at Houston or you won your local one. You won a pretty fucking big one.
My first one?
Yeah, it was the Gators, wasn't it?
Yeah, Gator Nationals.
How good of a race car did you have at that deal?
Would you believe I'd never sat in the car until that weekend?
Possibly.
Yeah. I built a brand new car. And Tommy Phillips took it out. He was running Division Four with it. I really didn't care too much about Super Comp at the time. I was a super gas racer. That's all I cared about. And he went out, ran all the Division Four races. And so I was going to the Gators. And I thought, well, you know, I'm going to the Gators. I have the car and the trailer. I might as well go ahead and enter it and race it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I took it there. And, dude, I'm telling you, oh, my God. The people that I had to run, it was so ridiculous. It was just one of those things. I guess it was just meant for me to win. But I get there, and on my time runs, the car would leave the starting line, and it would gurgle, what I call gurgle on the throttle stop. And if it did that, it went 895. And if it didn't gurgle, it'd go 890. I mean, it was like, just, that's what it did. And so I called Tommy and I go, dude, this car is like all over the place. He's like, well, what is it doing? And so this is before race packs, of course. And so I told him what it was doing. And he's like, oh, okay, well, here's what you do. Set it up for 885. And if it gurgles, you know, you're going 90. And if it don't gurgle, you're going 85. And I go, are you fucking kidding me? That's your advice? Yeah. Yeah. And behold, it worked. I mean, I don't know how, but it worked, and I won that race. So, yeah, I still give him shit about that today.
That was before you were a master of holding five, right?
You know, I never really held any ET until that weekend. I had a Grand Prix that I'm telling you right now, that thing was ridiculous. I mean, Bobby Shattuck stood on the starting line at Baton Rouge one year, and he told the officials, he said, if that car goes 990 one more time, I'm protesting. And, of course, 990. Yeah, I mean, that thing was just ridiculous how awesome it was. And so that's the way I raced. Even with the Vega, I raced nine, you know, right on the 90. And then when I started racing Super Comp, that shit went right out the window.
That rolled over to your Super Gas program, for sure.
Yes, yes, it did. It did, and my Super Street program. So, yeah, I don't dial 90 anymore. I try in time trials, but you know, I go set up for 85 now.
All I can tell you is the last time I pulled up next to that Grand Prix was at Houston in the semis of the National, and I was pretty much on a 80 or 81, and I think I left on you, and you still caught me at like eighth mile. And just rode me through the finish, and I about wrecked mine trying to park it down there on you. But I was like, how fast is he if I'm 80 and I tree him and I still get caught by, you know, at a before 1,000 foot?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't race everybody the same way. I raced Dan Bain at the Motorplex in 2002, I think it was. And we had a big weather change and all that, and And so we're going up to the starting line, and my buddies go, well, what are you going to set for? I said, oh, I'm setting for 890. And they go, what? And I go, oh, yeah, I'm setting for 890. I just don't know what the mile an hour is going to be. And they busted out laughing. So I'm running Dan Bain, and we're going down through there, and I pulled the damn parachute probably right in the mile an hour light, and of course slammed on the brakes, and I won. You know, but it was embarrassing because I hit the brakes so hard the damn parachute didn't even bloom. So I'm dragging it down the track, but I did pull it. It just did bloom. But yeah, I won it that year, so that was free.
Some of those times at the Motorplex, man, it's the weather's changed so much, and for us in Texas, it usually doesn't change that much. But there's times at the Motorplex where everybody will be 70s on the yep. brakes and still can't get back to even an 80, which is yep. you know, in Kansas and some of those places that's normal. But in Dallas, it'll really throw some curveballs sometimes. Those are fun rounds to watch.
Well, and cars nowadays, and you know, with all the weather stations and the race pack, and you know, I mean, cars are way better now than they were back then. It was a little more easy predicting. I mean, back when I won the championship, shit, I don't even think I had a weather station. It was fly by the seat of your pants. So,
well, I heard Steve Cohen, he won a lot over the years. I heard he never looked at a weather station.
Yeah, he's a very good racer.
He was.
Maybe that's my problem. I need to buy a weather station. No, that's not it. That doesn't help reaction time.
No. Yeah, Steve's another one of those I ran that you set up 80 and they're right beside you and you're going, what in the hell's going on? Like, I'm supposed to be having some room to play here. So, those guys in Supergas are fun to race with.
So, I just, you know, the whole time we did the golf cart race at Memphis, let's talk about this for a second.
Oh, God. Oh, this can't be good.
Ryan, you were in the hotel. You don't have any room to talk here, okay? Just hang on a minute. So, about the third person I sent to the tower, because they kept asking me what their reaction time was, over the radio I heard, if there's another fucking person that comes to the tower, we're done.
Well, so, I might, I'm not going to. I'm not going to confirm that. I do remember saying that, putting the reds on and saying the computer operator had to go to the bathroom.
That did happen.
I also remember saying that if someone didn't bring drinks to the tower, the computer operator was going to quit.
Yeah, there were Kenny Chesneys on the way very rapidly.
Yes. Yes.
How many gallons of Kenny Chesney mix do you think you go through a year? That's what I want to know.
Well, I usually bring 10 gallons to every race.
I bet I've drank a couple gallons of it this year.
Well, you know, that's what it's there for. I don't care who comes and gets some. That's what it's there for.
What is the Kenny Chesney mix? What exactly is it?
It's Kenny Chesney Blue Chair Rum. Has peach schnapps. Has Blue Curacao. Sweet and sour mix.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it actually is very good. I mean, everybody raves about it, but it cost about, I don't know, about $110 for 5 gallons for me to make it. But
can you believe you get to bring your own cup?
I used to let them do that, but I got solo cups now. I got the Toby Keith red solo cups.
Huffman supplies cups and straws, man. Come on.
Yeah, he does. I tell you what. That's what got me going was damn Rick. He'd be racing, I'd be working. I go, hey, you know, I'm in the tower up here, and I sure could use a drink. And he'd come right up here and bring me one.
A good dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Rick's good people.
Oh, absolutely. So how many – you have a certain Vega that's been in your life for a long time.
Yep.
How many times have you owned this thing?
I bought it in 1983, and luckily for me, this was way before any kind of, I mean, dude, I went and picked this car up with a truck and a tow rope and towed it home. This is way before trailers now. Mm-hmm. And I had to use the Fred Flintstone feet to stop it because it was just a bare body with a roll cage, and that's it. No aluminum interior, no seats, no brakes, no nothing. And I built that car basically myself. It's been through a few, you know, plastic surgeries since I've owned it. I've redone it several times, but bought it in 83. And I've probably sold it and bought it back five times. Fives being probably very conservative. But the guy that owns it now is Les Fluker. He bought it from the last guy I sold it to, which was Buddy Woods.
Yep.
And he called me the day he picked it up. He called me on the way home. He said, "Hey, I bought your Vega. Would you be interested in driving it?" I go, "Yeah." So that's kind of how we got hooked up.
Is that the same Vega you ran in the early 90s yep. Super Street?
Yep. Exact same car.
Dude, you killed Division 4 in that thing in Super Street.
That car is pretty awesome. Anybody that's ever drove it or owned it has won in it. Heath Phillips had it. Damon Dabbs had it. Jimmy Paulson had it.
Had it too, didn't he?
Gene Nicodemus had it. That's who I bought it back from the last time was Gene.
Yeah.
So there's been several people that's drove it and won. Tommy Phillips. He won it. He ran it 1 year in Super Street and won every division race that he entered in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you today, that thing's is probably the nicest Vega out there.
It is, but it really is. But it you know, it's really nothing special. It's a home built, mild steel ladder bar car. I mean, seriously. But that thing just works. I mean, it's. And by no, you know, not like I'm a professional or anything. It was just luck that it turned out to be what it is. But it is a very good car.
Which Vega is this? The blue and white one?
Yeah.
Oh, the one that I got offered.
Yeah, the one that I offered you to drive, and you know, snubbed your nose at it.
Listen,
wow.
You drove
a fucking primer Monza instead.
I run it up in a car that was trying to kill me. I surely would have sealed the deal with that thing, right?
Yeah, can you believe he drove that Monza over my Vega?
I can't believe it. The disrespect.
Well, it's one of those things that you know, Charlie had never offered me to drive anything, and I sweet-talked him into letting me come down there because I had, you know, alternative motive to be there. And I was I think, you know, I hounded Charlie to drive this thing. Frank, you know, later finally offers to let me drive the Vega. I was hoping it was going to break, but it didn't.
Well, almost, you know, honestly, I'm just going to be honest. I'm kind of glad you didn't drive it after seeing you slam on the brakes in the golf cart. I'm not sure what you'd have done to the Vega.
Well, I almost rolled it out of Memphis because I was struggling, okay?
And I know that is a nice car. It is. It just gets better with age, Frank.
It's been around for a long time. I'm very fortunate that the guy that bought it lets me drive it. I'll be honest with you.
This is the same car that you didn't want to unload to change the part that was broke on the dragster, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I could fix the dragster, but I got to unload the Vega to get to it.
Okay. Yep. Get lazy and, dude, I'm 60. Do you realize how old I am? I'm 60.
I'd have helped you unload the Vega.
I have a whole lot less years ahead of me than I do behind me. That's why I told y'all, those who can do and those who can't become a race director.
Or announcer.
Or announcer, yeah.
We'll go with that. So, Frank, I actually don't know how you got started in drag racing. I'll just remember you around the early 90s and just winning. I just saw you winning a lot, and that's how I kind of knew who you were. But can you give me a little, like, how you got going and –
Well, I've always kind of had a big interest in cars, and when I turned 16, my dad bought me a 67 Camaro. It was school bus yellow, had shag carpet, but I'm telling you, it had moons on it, the chrome baby moons on it, and I'm telling you right now, I was in hog heaven. I used to drive that thing to Cedar Creek every weekend. Get there, jack it up, take the tires off, put slicks on it, which back then they were cheater slicks or something. And I'd race it and come back, jack it back up, put the regular tires back on it and drive it home. So I've just always loved drag racing, always loved going fast, working on cars. I guess you could just say it was in my blood, not, you know, my dad never raced. You know, it wasn't a family thing. It was just something that I always liked.
And then you got to running the super classes? When was that? Late 80s?
My first ever time to run anything in the super class, which was Super Street, was in 82. And that was back when the Vega was a full, I mean, it was a real Vega. It had all metal doors, front end, glass, had mufflers on it. I used to go to the old Houston strip and run Super Street with it. And so back then I was going 1090s at 139, which don't sound like much then, but back in 82, that was like unheard of.
Yeah, there were super gassers back then that couldn't run that.
Yes, I mean, it was – so I like to think that I probably started the mile-an-hour craze because, I mean, it was crazy. It was a small block with a tunnel ram and two fours, two 660s, and they go 1090 at 139. And, yeah.
That's still pretty fast.
Yeah, but, you know, now they got – shoot, they got guys going
like 165.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 1090. Buddy Woods probably. Well, I guess I want to say maybe Phil Unruh has the fastest Super Street car right now. I don't know him or Buddy. One of them. I mean, they're fast. And then of course you got super gas cars. It'll, you know, pro stock cars running super gas. It'll go, you know, 190. I guess who did that? What was the guy's name that did that?
Oh, didn't Unruh run super gas in a Corvette once?
Yeah, but it was. Oh, I'm trying to think of the guy's name that did it. Don or Donnie or something. Like, I can't remember the guy's name that
I'm
went out there.
Too.
Now, I know Jeggy went out there with his damn car and was, like, doing that too. But this guy was, like, the first one to ever do that. I can't remember his name now.
I don't know, Frank. I just announced.
You should know everybody.
Okay.
You announce every car and every name and every – you know, you should know everything.
You should know everybody. You're in charge of the rules of the race.
That's IHRA, not NHRA.
And yeah. Well, you know.
You haven't asked me, so I'm just gonna bring it up. You never asked me what I thought my biggest accomplishment was in drag racing.
We haven't got there yet.
Oh wow! I want to hear it.
We're only 30 minutes in, but let's go.
No, but I mean, I didn't know if he was gonna ask me. So I've been thinking about this one.
Hey, Frank.
What?
What's your biggest accomplishment in drag racing?
Oh, I never thought you was going to ask. you know, a lot of people would think that I would say my national championship, right? I mean, that would be – if you only won the national championship once, you would think that would be what you'd say, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, I think that's probably my second biggest. I think my biggest accomplishment is probably the one thing that nobody has ever done.
What's that?
Y'all don't even know. In 2002,
okay,
I won the division championship in Super Gas and Super Comp in NHRA, and I won the division championship in Top Sportsman and Top Dragster in IHRA in the same year. So four division championships in 1 year.
In the same cars?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's impressive.
So were you just – what car were you running in Super Gas at the time?
The Grand Prix.
So you were just turning the stop off and running wide open in the Top Sportsman?
Well, I had to put nitrous on it because it wasn't fast enough.
What was the brake back then? Was it still 8-flat or 7-9?
Yeah, you had to go faster than 8-flat to run IHRA.
Top Sportsman.
Top Sportsman, yep.
And then was Top Dragster still 750?
Yeah, but my dragster was plenty fast enough. The Super Comp car, I just turned the throttle stops off. Got so, yeah, same two cars and just, you know, turn the stops off and turn the bottle on. And of course, you had to take the bottle off to go run NHRA because they wouldn't allow it in the car. But.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's something I never knew. I didn't even know it was possible. How do you make all those races?
Well, and you know what was really funny? Oh, that's all I did was race. What was really funny is in order for me to accomplish that is I had to go to Vegas – at the end of the year, it had to be an 8-round race, and I had to win it to win the Super Comp division championship. And Ricky Kyles was leading at the time. And I mean, just being honest, I didn't even know. About fourth round, people started coming up to me and going, hey, you know, you got a shot to win the division championship? And I go, no. Oh, yeah, if you win this, you're the division champ. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so I mean, I really, honestly, I didn't know. I mean, I kept up with points, but I really didn't know that. But yeah, so I went to Vegas and it was 8-round race and I won it, capped it off.
That's impressive. Okay, so here's my question. Why the fuck do you even go to Vegas if you didn't know?
Dude, you have no idea. That year that I won the championship in Super Comp, let me just tell you how retarded this was, okay? I'd never driven the car, and I go to the Gators, and I win it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, that's a fluke, right? I mean, really, seriously. Guy, never been in the car. He goes there. He wins the race. It's a fluke.
Yep.
Well, then I come back, give Tommy the car. He finished Division Four out, and I decided I have a shot in Super Gas. So I'm going to Douglas and Denver. Well, I go to Douglas and suck balls. And so I go to Denver. Well, I win and runner-up in Denver.
Okay.
So, and I won in Super Comp. So now I got two wins out of three races. And so I'm sitting there, and I call Tommy, and I'm just like, you know, I mean, I probably got an outside shot at this. I said, you know, I mean, I realize it's only two races, but, you know, what do you think? He's like, dude, I mean, if I was you, I'd go. I was like, okay. So here we go. We leave Denver. We go to Seattle. I win Seattle. So now I've got three wins out of four races. I leave Seattle. I go to Oregon on my way to Sonoma. And they have, Oregon has this, I don't know, they call it some freaking warm-up deal or whatever. I win that thing, which don't count for any points, but I still win it. So we leave there, go to California, and Tommy flies in, and he's feeling a little low because he had just won like five division races in stock or something. I mean, he was like just really killing them in stock, and then this Don Little guy comes out and wins every division race he goes to. And beats him for the world championship. So he's feeling low, you know, he's kicking himself. And I said, hey, you know, I don't even give two shits about Super Gas. I go, why don't you drive my Roadster here? And I really just want to concentrate on Super Comp. He's like, you sure you don't mind? I go, no, that's fine. So he jumps in my car and he wins Sonoma in my Super Gas car. I don't think I had a very good outing in Sonoma. I think I might have went third or fourth round. But so anyway. So then I get through with those, and I go, well, I got the national event. Yeah, I got 315 points. One of them was a 115. So I might have had 330 points in three counts of races for the national event. So I had to find division races to go to. So me being who I am, I decide I'm going to run Division 5, and there's only two races left that I can go to in that. I go to Delaware. I mean, dude, I burnt the roads up.
That's a long way from Oregon.
Yes. I ended up winning the world, but I didn't even win the division. You know, because I only got to go to three races, and one of them was Douglas that I lost first round. So, I figured it up. I spent $90,000 that year to win 115. And
that's
I
not,
said,
that's
you
not
know,
good.
Yeah, I said, I'm out. I'm not ever doing this again. So.
Oh my gosh. I guess I never sat back and thought about how much it all cost to run all those races.
It's a lot. Tommy's still shaking his head.
What year was that again?
99.
Yeah. Well, it still paid decent money to win a national back then.
Yeah, I could win a national event. It paid, you know, Indy was the granddaddy of them all, but my normal national event was about 15,000 mm-hmm. with continuous and everything. And then in 2013, I won Indy, which should have been close to 20 back in those days. And I'm driving Tommy Phillips' car. And trust me when I tell you, he has every manufacturer possibility that a person can have. He buys it, whether – you know what I'm saying? I mean, mm-hmm. has the decal. His car is always, like, you know, the shit. And for me to win Indy that year, it paid less than 10 grand.
Damn.
Wow.
Why? Yeah,
definitely has gone down over the years, unfortunately, but the cost of racing just keeps going up.
Mm-hmm. My last national event, 2016, I went to Phoenix, and I won Phoenix, and it paid less than $6,000.
Yeah, it's hard to justify, like you talked about spending all that money in to go chase the championship, but at least when you won something back then, it made a difference. It kept you on the road, kept you going, and nowadays, I mean, it hardly pays for the gas to get to and from and the entry fees.
And rightfully so. Most people honestly don't do it for the money. Back then, I kind of did. I raced for a living. So it was about the money, but even today, it's we all like to leave with a paycheck, but it's honestly about the win for me. I don't care if it's a $700 race at Extreme that a Pinto beats me at, or if it's a national event. I just want to win. And so that's just competitive in me. I can't help with that.
You had a really good outing at Holly Springs. Like, you were doubled very, very late, the dragster, right?
Yep. I made it down to four. I was doubled, I think, at either 7 or 14. I was doubled, and then I lost at four. But you know how it is. Unless you go to the million and they start splitting at 22, you don't really come out with any money unless you win.
Yeah, I know how it is.
So, Frank, how did you get into racing, start chasing the points nationally and traveling? Like, what was the decision that just because you were winning so much locally, or was just, I want to go do this?
Well, as Ryan said earlier, you know, when that Vega, or I guess Gary said it, when that Vega first came out, I was winning everything I went to. But, you know, back then, they didn't have a national championship for Super Street. And that was way before IHRA was even in the picture. So I had sent Gary Harwood a letter and told him that, you know, what my accomplishments was and that I really wanted to run Super Gas, but I didn't feel like I had a competitive car. You know, it was too heavy and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, believe it or not, he responded and gave me everything for my Vega. Front end, doors, Lexan, everything. And so I carried the Harwood name on the side of the car for like 2 years and moved up to Super Gas with it. But even at all that, it still wasn't really – I mean, back then, that, you know, the 1090 at 139 ended up being 990 at 143, and by then, you know, we got cars going 160. So I just didn't feel like it was competitive.
Is that when you got the Roadster?
Yeah, I bought the Roadster from Donald Boyd, started racing it. It was a good car, but you know how Roadsters are. They really struggle with wind. And got in with – let me just tell you, that thing made me look good. That was a good car.
Yeah, you won a lot in that.
Yep.
So a question that I don't know how – I think I know your answer to it. Obviously now IHRA doesn't have a like your typical 90 classes like NHRA does, like we've been talking about.
Right.
Why is it? Because I was when I first got into big cars, y'all were still doing the pro-ams, and I really enjoyed the format. You know, get to run two races in the weekend. That was every pro-am in the country, and I liked that, and I liked how there's a difference. There's tracks are 1/8 mile, 1,000 foot, 1/4 mile. I like the way top dragster, top sportsman were open. Why do you think that never took off, at least in this area?
You know, that I ask myself that question all the time. You know, when we originally started, I thought it was because there were 8 mile tracks, and so we accumulated 1/4 mile tracks, and we, you know, proceeded to do those at 1/4 mile tracks, and still the people didn't come. The people that raced IHRA loved IHRA. The problem was there just wasn't enough of them. You have the NHRA stigma, I guess if you want to call it that, that, you know, well, okay. So here's the thing with me. When I raced NHRA only, that's all I would race. And I'd have people come to me and say, hey, you know, IHRA is having a race. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? I'm not going to go race that. Well, why not? I said, I play in the major leagues. I don't play minor ball. I mean, so I was that guy. Seriously, I was that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same mentality like that. And so a buddy of mine finally talked me into going to a race. And when the very first race I went there, I don't even think I won, but I was like, wow, this is like awesome. I mean, all the tech guys are friendly. The race is fun. You know, I was like, shit, I mean, this is cool. So that's when I started running both. But you have a lot of people that have that. I mean, I had an NHRA guy back when we were running the pro-ams call me up, and we were running the double races. And he was like, hey, I just want to call and kind of give you a little feedback. And I was like, oh, okay, what's up? He was like, you know, I go to race to have a good time. And I go, okay, cool, I hope you are. He goes, well, yes and no. And I go, well, what's the problem? He goes, well, these two races in one weekend, he goes, I feel like I'm at work again. I like to, you know, I like to go make a couple runs and cook out and drink beer. And he goes, shit, all you do is race, 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 and get up and race, 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 and race again tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, I go, well, I mean, I guess our format's not for everybody, but, you know, I appreciate the input. But, you know, just some of those people are like that. They go to relax. And if you've been to one of our double pro-ams, you know there's not a whole lot of time for relaxing.
No, I mean, you're wide open, especially yep. If you're in two classes. I mean, you're getting after it.
Yep, it's like a big bracket race. I mean, you know, just race, 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 race. So I guess that's why I didn't take off. I really don't know. And, you know, IHRA's been through five owners since I went to work for them. And the people that own us now, you know, they really don't know what we do, but it's about the bottom line. And since we quit the Pro-Am races 2 years ago, actually IHRA makes money now. So, you know, that's if good. You want to stay in business, you can't keep doing what you, that you know, keep losing money. Yep.
Nope. That's so, understandable.
Yep. I'm sure one day, again, someone will own IHRA that wants to go back to class racing, but it ain't going to be the group that owns us now, you know.
My dad was one of those that just wanted to run NHRA, never run the IHRA. We made a handful of races over the years. Boom. And every time. I always enjoyed the IHRA stuff.
Did you just boo him?
He did. Boo. I think he booed him. Boo my dad. He's the one that owned everything. But I always thought they were fun races.
For a long time.
Oh yeah. No, he's raced with you long before I ever did. It was just kind of weird that he kind of looked down on it too. But they were the most fun races we went to.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I thought I knew. I really did. I thought, well, it's because we're 8 mile tracks. Nobody wants to run 8 miles. So we go quarter mile tracks and then they still don't come. Well, it's, you know, your quarter mile tracks aren't very nice. But, you know, now NHRA has all the quarter mile tracks that I used to have. They have Tulsa, they have San Antonio, you know. And they're still not very nice tracks, you know. I mean, seriously, I was at Tulsa this weekend. And the pits are exactly what they are. They're the pits. I mean, the track was fine, but, you know, you're dodging potholes to come back to the starting line. But, you know, people still go there. So, hey.
Yeah, I mean, we're down. I mean, Division 4 is down to the Motorplex and Houston as their two decent tracks. And, you know, they're not what they were.
At the Motorplex and three at Houston, and they'd be good.
Yeah, but they're not what they used to be either.
No, a Motorplex is horrible with the rocks, dude. Every time I go there, I can unload the rocks out of my car and start a garden. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, I was shocked how many rocks are at the Motorplex now. But the good thing is they're not down in the parking area where they used to be. They're all on the starting line. But
Yeah. You're exactly right. But, you know, we have some good tracks. And, you know, NHRA has some good tracks. It's just you know, unfortunately, bracket racing don't make a lot of money, not on a weekly basis, and those events do, and that's the only really event that they care about, you know.
Yeah, so you said that IHRA is actually doing better now that they've gone to the bracket racing format?
Oh, yeah. We actually ain't losing money anymore. So, you know, like I said, I definitely want to keep my job. I miss the pro-ams. I don't miss everything about the pro-ams, but I do miss class racing. I wish we still did it, but I also understand why we don't do it. So we just try to make, you know, we actually have the best program for sports and racers in our Summit Super Series. You know, I mean, four people from every track get invited to go to the World Finals. And that's a six-round. This year it was a six-round race with no entry fee and $20,000 to win. And there's no buybacks, and you get tow money to go. So, I mean, I don't know how you make it any better than that, honestly.
So is that for the near future? Is that IHRA's direction? Is keep kind of building this bracket racing format? And
I think so. I mean, honestly, I think that's I don't see us in the near future going back to class racing. I could be wrong, but I don't see that. Yeah. I think they're just trying to build our Summit Super Series.
That's a good deal. I mean, it has seemed like you said, there were a bunch of owners in IHRA for years. It seemed like there was a new direction every couple of years or so, but the last few have been pretty stable. So,
you ever get tired of being bitched at about stuff that you're not even in control of whenever you're the race director?
Yes, I do. I'm not going to lie about that, but I also understand, because I'm a racer, I understand that racers need to vent. And I have a lot of them come to the tower and, you know, MF me and raising hell and backseat, you know, quarterbacking and all that shit. I get all that. And I'll stand there and listen to what they have to say, and I'm good with it. But there's been a few times and a few people that have pushed my button. They start the moment that they F-bomb IHRA or something like that. When they start making it personal, I guess I should say, when they start making it personal, I do lose my temper. And there's been a few occasions that I guess I'm still fortunate to have a job because, the old Frank comes back out in me. and Tracy Dennis told me at Indy a few years ago, he said, I sure miss the old Frank. And I said, well, I don't. Because, I used to get myself in a lot of trouble with my temper. So
we had a pretty good one at the old Halloween race.
What did I do at the Halloween race? What did I do?
Well, we didn't have a good – we just had a good MF session at the tower, and I just sat there and watched you smile at him, and I think it made him even more mad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, well, that's what I have to do, though. You know what I'm saying? He didn't make it personal, so I understand he needs to vent. And like I said, it's – I've learned over the last few years that you just got to let a racer vent. You know, he thinks what he has to say is the most important thing out there. So
you just flip the switch in the tower for that guy.
I wish there was a magical switch, because I'd be flipping on several of them.
So speaking of the old Frank, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So there was a race at Noble where you may or may not have got chased around your race car in the staging lanes.
Where?
No, never.
By old man Axum?
No, he didn't chase me. Melvin was driving my car at the time.
Okay.
I was sitting, Melvin had just ran his daughter, and I was sitting on my golf cart, and we were, I guess they were multi-entered or whatever, so Melvin came back up, we're sitting in the pit area, and Johnny Axum comes over and starts screaming at Melvin. And I was like, whoa, 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 calm down, calm down. He goes, he's going to stage. I was like, dude, nope, he don't have to stage first. I go, you just need to chill out. Well, I'll just whoop your ass. And he's headed over to me, and, well, I'm not going to let somebody hit me first. So let's just say it wasn't pretty. But and then me and him carried that on for 5 or 10 years. Every time I seen him at the racetrack, he's wanting to fight. And well, we made up since then. We're all good. I'm too old to fight anymore, honestly. But sometimes that still comes out in me. I'm not beyond it.
No.
But no, I ain't running from nobody. Okay. I ain't scared of nobody on two legs, period. So you can take that little story and take it right out the window.
I'll tell that to the person that told me then.
Okay.
And then we had another one, and I am – you're going to know who brought it up as soon as I said it.
All right.
This person said that back in the Super 10 days that Slate Cummins was your daddy, and he's still your daddy now.
Well, I don't know about the Super 10 days, but we were in Tulsa one year, and we wrestled for about an hour. And we had a pretty good crowd. We wasn't fighting. We were wrestling.
Okay.
And, of course, that wasn't the Slate that the Slate is now.
Slate, no, that was Fat then, Slate.
Yeah, it was fat slate. And so, well, I'm not stupid, okay? So I'm not going to wrestle him today, but I did challenge him to an arm wrestling match.
I watched that, and I was rather impressed.
He did beat me, but so after I bet him 100, and so I paid him, and I said, okay, so now the money's out of the way, we're going to do this again. And so I tried him again, and he did beat me again, but I vowed that next year at his race, he will not beat me. So
Tammy was not impressed.
Oh, well, she's never impressed by me, so. Have you seen how big he is?
He's swole. I saw LaBouche try to slap him once.
Holy moly, that boy's big.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a lot younger than me. I mean, like I told him, I said, dude, I'm supposed to lose to you. You're 40. I'm 60. You're, like, work out every day. I don't even barely get off the couch. So, but, you know, I will tell you, he's the only one that's ever beat me.
Really?
Yeah, I used to be an arm wrestler back in the day.
Oh.
Were you?
Do not let Troy Williams Jr. hear that, because he will be all over that idea.
I'm just telling you. I mean,
ever arm wrestled Nate Dogg?
I had an arm wrestling deal table that I carried in the back of my truck. And yeah, I'm not bullshitting you. I've never been beat. You? He beat me, though. So it is what it is.
You ever arm wrestled Nate Dogg? Because Nate Dogg likes to arm wrestle.
Nope, never arm wrestled. I never really arm wrestled anybody at the racetrack, but the slate, that's it.
My clothes are done.
I was going to say somebody's laundry's ready.
Get your clothes out of the dryer.
Did you steal a fucking wash machine from a fucking wash and dry?
Hey, that's better hearing that dryer go off than somebody announcing at the Great American Bracket Race and farting on the mic.
Who is that?
I have that on my phone.
Well, it's probably someone had to send it to you, because I know you don't have Facebook.
And it's go time. Oh, Mark, did you really hear that? He goes, did you really hear that? Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah. Hey, you know what? They still paid me.
Hey, it's all you next year. I'll just be there for the dream team.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do about that, but that's a...
It's Galen's fault.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of back-to-back weekends, though, honestly.
Do you?
Yeah, me too, just not that weekend.
Oh, before you get married or something?
No, I called Galen and said, hey, I'm doing a no-box race up here Memorial Day weekend. All I'm going to miss is Dream Team, right? Yep, that's it. You're good. I said, all right, if I miss Dream Team, I'm okay with it. I want to be there for the million. I put my race out there on the internet. Literally 10 minutes after I put it out there, Britt calls me. What, you don't want to work for me anymore? And I said, do you need me for the dream team? He said, no, we're moving the million back to that weekend. And I said, I literally just asked Galen 2 weeks ago. And he said, all I would miss was the dream team. He said, nope, the million's that weekend.
Well, and they were playing, they were, you know, kicking around about doing the dream team in Holly Springs and then going to Memphis. And I'm like, dude, why do you want to make racers travel from Holly Springs to Memphis the week? I said, let them all get in there and get set up. And we're good for 2 weeks.
Yep. 10 days of racing or 11 days or whatever it is.
Yep, we'll have one day off.
That's going to be a hell of a day.
Yeah, I think I may go see if Elvis is home.
You'll probably see Elvis at the end of the second week.
No, it couldn't be no worse than this year, dude. 3 weeks back-to-back at Memphis wore me out. I mean, I didn't even go run the Folk Million because I was just exhausted.
Yeah, because when I left Memphis – you were, like, still kind of on the fence. And then by the time I got to Montgomery, you were like, there's no chance.
Yeah. I don't have the stamina that I used to have. Just ask my wife.
Frank, just let me go racing with you. I'll drive the Vega and help you drive the rig. What could go wrong?
Everything. Oh. So Frank, you spend more time in the tower now than you do behind the wheel. But so how has that transition been for you? Do you have just as much fun? Is it a different challenge?
Oh, it's definitely a different challenge, but I'll be honest with you, it helps me by, you know, not being in the car, because I miss the people, miss the racing, so that helps. But I ain't gonna lie, I would almost rather be head of staging guy or a rear staging guy or something, because you can ask Ryan and Jake, they're in the tower, they see what we deal with up there. I have people come up there and go, hey, look at this time slip. And I go, oh, yeah, shit, dude, you just barely missed it. Use red right there. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I was set for 10 there. There's no way I was red.
I remember that conversation.
And I go, dude, I'm a former world champ, and I can set for 10 and go red. So I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, you just get people just, oh, my God. Some of the stories I hear.
So is it worse now with the timing system issues of people blaming the timing system than it used to be?
Yeah.
I mean, back in the old days when I started, we expected the timing system to be bad. Hell, we didn't even have reaction timers back then. So, you know, nowadays.
Yeah, I think the greatest race ever was Galen's out of the gate race. No time slips, no nothing, no scoreboards. You just got a wind light. That was the greatest thing ever. It's just, well, the cars are so good now. And, you know, I mean, I can make 45 runs in my dragster, and I know that it's going to be between a 105, 106, 60 foot. So when a guy goes up there and has a 108, 60 foot or a 104, he's like, oh, there's no way. I mean, hell, look at all my time slips. He'll bring a stack of 100 time slips up there. You know, my car's never had that. There's something wrong with your timing system. I'm like, dude, there's nothing wrong with the timing system. You know, and now if there is something wrong with it, I'll admit to it. But most of the time, there's not. But there has been some weird stuff lately. I will say that. Some unexplainable stuff. It's not just one timing system either. So.
Yeah, I mean, all of them do have their flaws. Now, do you think it's obviously it's not much of a secret? Like, CompuLink's run off a computer that was developed in like 1985. AccuTime's a little bit newer. They run off a window-based deal. Do you think there's improvement in the timing system area?
Do I think there's room for improvement?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I send Bob and Rusty stuff all the time that I'd like to see changes made. But unfortunately, you know, with every change, it takes time and money. And, you know, they want to be paid for that. So, I mean, I get it. But, yeah, there's definitely room for improvement. You know, I would like to tell you there's an alternate timing system, but there isn't. I mean, CompuLink and AccuTime, and to me, are the Cadillac of timing systems. Used to have all kinds of other timing systems out there. I think the only other one now that's even still still in use is, I guess, Porter Tree. And I've heard that, Baton Rouge, not Baton Rouge, no problem, has Porter Tree. And now the Motorplex has one.
Yep.
Will NHRA still go there with them going to Porta Tree?
Well, they're keeping the CompuLink in place for their two events only. But other than those two events, they will use Porta Tree for everything else.
Wow. So, all the wiring and all the sensors, do they even run off the same sensors?
Well, I don't know if they're the exact same sensors, but I think they're pretty close. I mean, it's just something that breaks the beam when you go through it. I can't imagine that. But, you know, CompuLink's been mad at Motorplex for years because of their scoreboards. They're not CompuLink scoreboards. They're whatever, Daktronics or whatever. And, you know, so it causes a lot of issues. And then they haven't sent their computer back since Moby Dick was a Mena. And so, you know, Brockmeyer's upset about that, which I understand it. I mean, seriously, a timing system should be sent back every year for a clean up, a freshen up, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
But if you're not having a problem with the timing system, then if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the mentality of most racetrack owners. And I get that. I think it could be helped on both ends. Track owner and the timing system guy could work a little better together. It would make things better.
I can't agree with that. Eventually they're going to have come up with something newer. You would think.
Timing system-wise?
Yeah.
I've actually had somebody approach me offering to pay for everything if I would develop a timing system. And I said, dude, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So I do agree. I think that either the two Cadillacs timing systems we have need to step up and make some improvements, or someone should develop a new system, because I think, you know, as good as cars and things are now, it's growing more and more important. I mean, we can't even get track operators to go out there and set the rollout on a weekly basis. Oh, we just said it last month. Well, you know, asphalt, concrete, all that moves, you know. And these guys that run these cars, including me, myself, I have a car that, I mean, I know what my delay is at a racetrack. And when you go and you have different delay in both lanes and the 60-foot's different, well, you know the rollout's different. Well, to me, I like that. I think it's an advantage because I'll know there's a difference. And most people don't know that. They're just like, oh, well, shit, I mean, I need 1,100 and to go, you know, 00, and I'm just going to leave it 1,100. And maybe in the other lane, they didn't need 1,100. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Last time I raced Cedar Creek, there was 500ths difference in delay between lanes.
Yep. And I guarantee you it's still 500ths different.
Oh, I can't imagine it's being any different. But that was the last time I was there. Me and Luke Bogacki ran in the finals and split it.
That was a long fucking time ago, because I can imagine Luke hasn't been there in two decades.
It was a long time. It's back when I had the Roadster. I just went there. I ran the throttle stop all the way down the track because that track is so rough. And me and him split in the finals, and that was the last time I was there.
So, Frank, before we move on from timing systems, what would you like to see in a timing system if you could change one?
Well, both CompuLink and AccuTime both have really good things about them, but they also both have things that I would like to see improved and changed. But I like the 4-digit deal that AccuTime has versus the 3-digit that Brockmeyer has. But, you know, there's been two or three time slips posted on Facebook recently where, you know, there's no explanation of how this person won over this person. And, you know, I mean, like, if you look on paper, it was like a dead tie. And I think in that instance, there needs to be a reason. You know what I'm saying? It's hard for a guy to come to the tower and show that he lost on a dead tie. He got there first, but it was a dead tie and he lost. And he's like, you know, how did I lose that race? It's tough as a race director to make the guy understand that. So I really think that it needs to go further out on that instance. You know, I don't know. That's a really tough question. Like I said, they both have good and bad flaws. I would just like to see – I like to see a good bracket racing timing system, which AccuTime is. And I think CompuLink is an awesome national event timing system. I think he could use a little more work on his bracket program, but I like both timing systems. I know them both really well. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I don't – you know, there's other ones out there that I highly would not recommend, and I'm not even going to bring those names up. But I'm just telling you, those are the two best ones.
Well, I'll tell you, that 4th digit just confuses the shit out of me, so I have to really pay attention.
Hey, well, I like big good Crondeck system.
TSI, Crondeck, Race America.
So, Frank, tell me, just give me the first good racing story that comes off the top of your head. Give me a good, funny, good old time at the racetrack, whether you're in Oregon or you're home in Texas. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the only one that really comes to mind is when I got my ass whooped by a Pinto. I'm still upset about that.
Hey, did it have hood rich on the side?
It didn't.
Oh, shit.
No, this is the blue one.
No, it didn't even have a damn back glass in it.
Oh, yeah. Is that the...
That was the blue one. That the
Shore had?
Shore? Yes, same one Shore had.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I sprayed that motherfucker from .4 to the finish line.
Oh, boy. Frank, you better be careful. I'll let him foot wreck a wagon and do it again.
No, I guess really the only other good story I'd have, there's two. One was I was in Noble. Well, actually, they were both happened in Noble. And I was at Noble, Oklahoma, running a CBRA race. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell you the year it was, but it was a Carl Blanton race.
Yep.
And it was one of those freaking marathon all night. Well, I don't think it was a Mulligan race, was it?
Oh, no. Under the Lights.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. But anyway, so it was we were there racing. I don't know, 2-3 in the morning, we're still racing, and I'm just dog ass tired, and they had an oil down, I don't know, whatever it was. So anyway, I told Tammy, she already went to bed, and I was like, I'm done, I don't even care about this race anymore. So I go get in the motorhome, And I had a motorhome, nothing like what I had now, but I had a little Holiday Lumalite gas motorhome. And I go get on the couch and I go to sleep and I'm laying there and all I hear, all of a sudden I hear Super Pro back to the lanes. And I go, well, shit, I'm up. I might as well go, right? So I get up, get in my car, go back up there, win the round. Well, I end up winning the race. Okay. So I win the whole race. So next week, it's about Tuesday, I guess, Carl Blanton calls me and he goes, hey, we were just looking over all the run logs.
I know where this is going.
And he goes,
you skipped the fucking round.
He goes, apparently you missed round five. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, you missed round five. I go, you're smoking crack, dude. I didn't miss no round. He goes, yeah, I'm telling you. We're looking at the run logs. You missed round five. I go, hold on 1 second. So I go get all my time slips. I always keep my time slips. And I go, here we go. T1, T2, E1, E2, E3, E5, E6, E7. Oh, shit, I missed round four. And or round five, whatever it was I missed. And he goes, yeah, I told you, you missed it. And I go, well, you ain't getting the money back. He's like, no, I'm not calling you for the money. Get the money back. He goes, but I'm just letting you know you missed a round. And I go, well, that was, you know, a damn marathon race. I guess I just slept through one of them. I don't know. So anyways, so that was kind of funny. But, yeah, I won a race that I missed a round on. So have you ever heard somebody do that?
No, I haven't.
Well, Carl Blanton will tell you the story in a heartbeat because he still reminds me of it. And the only other race that I guess comes to mind is me and Tommy were at Noble. We were running a 10,000 to win. I think it was Ralph Abraham race, 10,000 to win. And we're down to six cars. And, of course, I had two dragsters back then, so I gave Tommy – the bracket car, and I had the super comp car, which is really wasn't shit for bracket racing. But I was like, we both ran it. So we're down to six cars. Well, Tommy is the wait and see buy, and the buy carried it back then too. So we're sitting at the trailer, and he goes, you know, if I win this round, I got the buy to the final. And I go, well, that's cool. I go, maybe we'll both make the finals. And he's like, well, you know, if we ran each other at six and I win, I got to buy at three. And I go, oh shit. Yeah, I never thought about that. So we wait till they're like, last call. I mean, get your ass up here. We're fixing to run without you. And so me and Tommy go rolling up there back to back and run each other at six cars. Of course I deep stage. So he wins. And then he goes on and wins the race. So that's probably in my whole life was two races that I've ever thrown for somebody. And both of them were for Tommy Phillips. And the other time I gave the race to him was we were at Phoenix and we traveled together and he was chasing a world championship. I was just getting in the way as usual. And so we get paired on a ladder and we have to run each other as round three or round four. And if he wins that round, he's guaranteed number two in the world and still has a shot to win the world. So we're sitting at the trailer and he goes, you know, if I win this round, I'm guaranteed number two. And I said, well, that's cool. He goes, so you want to stay at the trailer or you want me to go up there and kick your ass for free? And I said, what? He goes, well, I mean, if I beat you, I get number two for sure. He goes, and I'll split what I get with you on that. Or I'll just go up there and kick your ass for free. And I was like, oh, my God. So I stayed at the trailer, let him have that round, but that's the only two races in my whole life that I've ever gave to somebody, and they were both to Tommy's. You ever thrown a race, Ryan?
No.
Jay? No. Jay, you ever thrown a race?
No, I'm not a good loser.
I'm not good of a friend as you are.
Me neither. Still haunts me today.
No. I beat my own fucking car owner this year, so, at Noble.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was driving Will Carroll's Camaro. I roll up there for round two. It breaks the starter. Well, luckily, they had first or second round buyback. So we go back, fix the starter, and I make it back in time for the second entry. Well, me and Will are the last two there, and he had lost both of his entries first round and already lost the first one second round. I'm like, man, and I offered it to him, like, I'll leave when the top bulb comes on. I just need a time run. Like, that way you can at least make it the second round. And he told me no, he won the race, and I think I was like 19 total.
Well, he's a better guy than me.
Yeah, you would have probably threatened me, be like, you're not winning right here.
No, I didn't do that. But, you know, Chris Galletti used to drive. He drove one of my cars back before he was, you know, big time. And we were at San Antonio one year, and he was running my other dragster. And we had to run each other, I think, maybe in the finals of the semis. And I told him, I said, look, dude, I'm not going to ask you to throw the race because that's not the way I am. But if you should decide that you want to throw the race, I'll give you half of what my contingency is. He's like, no shit. And I was like, yeah. So he did. He threw the race, and I went on to win. And I did split it with him. But, yeah, I mean, that's a tough call. I mean, we all want to win, but I don't know. I guess that's a little marginal.
Yeah.
I didn't ask him to, but I did offer to give him half. So I didn't quite put it to me like Tommy Phillips did to me, you know.
No. You didn't tell me he gets ass busted for free?
Right. No, I didn't tell him that.
Oh, man.
So, Frank, who do you look up to in the sport?
I'm going to say hands down, Tommy Phillips is probably the best racer who's never won a national championship. Dude, that dude has won so much. It is unbelievable. And he's come close twice. He's finished number two in the world twice. He's really a great ambassador for the sport. Always helping people, doing things. So I would, you know, I don't know how you look up to someone that's younger than you, but I would say I think him. There's a lot of good people out there, though. There's a lot of assholes as well.
Plenty of those.
Yep, there's plenty of those. But there are a lot of good people in drag racing, and that's why I love racing so much. I mean, you can break something and people will just give you anything they got. Yep. And know you got to run them the next round and don't – you know what I'm saying? That takes a lot of character.
Definitely. Can I drive to Vega?
Yeah, sure.
Big Buck Nationals, let's go.
I offered it to you and you turned me down. I don't know that I give – I'm kind of like a woman there. You know, you offered to you once, you didn't take it. I'll offer it again.
Okay, so then can I drive the Vega?
Sure. Have I ever offered it to you yet?
You have not offered me the Vega.
Okay. All right, well, I'll offer it to you.
Perfect. My dreams come true.
Yeah, they have. It's much nicer than that piece of shit Pinto you were driving.
Yeah.
That he beat me with? Yeah.
or the piece of shit other Vega he drove.
That one's nice. It just needs to be painted.
I think the transmission.
The hook and hillbilly oil was that thing was kicking ass in Bristol.
It broke the planetary. I broke the rear end gear.
No, so y'all are asking all the questions. Let me ask you what made you start Drag Champ?
I was gonna let's put it this way. I wanted to scratch my own itch, I guess is the way to say it, because there's no one paying any attention to the bracket racers work. For that matter than HRA racers anymore. So just wanted to know who was winning all these races, and the money got bigger and bigger, and you really just couldn't find out who the hell won or who got down to even late, you know, from one night to the next. So
I'll tell you,
figured it'd be easy.
Really, really making a strong comeback. You know, used to, we couldn't get any big money races around here, and they're all over now. And with $3 or $4 million to win races. It's definitely picking back up.
There's no question. There's so much activity. We can't even keep up with it. I have a team of people that try to keep up with all these races, and there's 10 granders all over the country, you know, every week. And you just, I mean, it's a lot to keep up with. So.
Well, you do a good job. I see your name out everywhere. Everybody wearing your shirts and emails. And I mean, it's everywhere. So.
Good We're job. Trying, man. We're really just trying to promote people and promote the different racers and stuff. So, but somewhere along the way, we want people to know where they got the information so we can have a business too.
Change one thing about bracket racing, Frank. What is it?
I hate buybacks. I hate buybacks, but, you know, I mean, I hate them with a passion, but when I lose, I'm the first guy over there buying back. Honestly, I don't even mind the buybacks. What I would really like to see go away is double entries.
I can agree.
I'd rather pay $250 and everybody enter one time than pay $125 and everybody get to enter twice. it just really drags the race out, and you got to wait for people to, you know, especially the good people, you know, you get the Chad Sandlins and Jake Cowards and those guys that like win every damn round they enter, you know, and then you're turning around waiting on them. It just slows the program down. So I'd like to see, you know, they really did a good job at Tulsa this weekend. They actually allowed double entries, but they did it in two colors. And so they would run no box like teal and then box green, and then they'd go to no box pink and then box blue. And even though it was the same people, you know, the people that were doubled had time in between classes to come back. And they did a good job. I kudos to them for doing that. But yeah, I'd like to see double entries go away. If I had anything I could change about bracket racing.
I get it. I understand it.
Who's helped you the most over the years, Frank?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of people helped me over the years. You talking about financially or race car wise? I mean, I don't really know.
Who's made the biggest impact for you?
Man, that's a tough one there.
And it doesn't have to be one person. You can be multiple people.
I mean, I've had a lot of people help me out through the years. I mean, I would say, Tommy has to come to mind. He's always been there for me. I mean, you know, whether it's telling me to set for 85 and, you know, whatever, or, you know, like I called him this weekend when I was struggling with the car. He has a wealth of knowledge. So he's helped me a bunch, but I've had a lot of people help me over the years. So Donnie Burnside, you know, let me race for him for years. You know, when you don't have to have the financial, you know, when I first started racing, it was all on my dollar. And I would go to, I mean, my wife's sitting right here and she will vouch to me. We went to a race one time at Cedar Creek Dragway. It paid $4,000 to win, which back then was unheard of. That was like huge money. I had enough money to pay my entry, fill my truck up, and we had enough money for one hamburger and two Cokes. And if I didn't win, we were screwed. I mean, I had enough gas to get home. We were screwed. And I run it up that night. But back then, I didn't care about how much it cost. I didn't care what the odds were. I didn't care what the result. All I cared about was I was going to the races, and when I went, I was winning. I mean, that was my mentality, and which I think made me a lot stronger back then. Now, looking back on it, I'm thinking, what a freaking idiot. But, you know, she stood behind me the whole time and it's like, hey, you want to go? Let's go. And that's what we did. But nowadays, if the stars aren't aligned just right and someone didn't go wash my rig for me and put gas in it, shit, I can't leave a day early. I'm not going. I'll just stay home. I guess that's the difference in age in me now, though. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it tames you down a little bit for sure.
A lot. Well, I mean, I work all day at a job, leave the job after I get off work, drive to Baton Rouge, sleep in my truck at the front gate from 2 a.m. till they open the gate, race all day without a shower. I'm like, there's no way I would do that now. I don't care if the race is free. I'm not doing no.
I think I've talked about it before, but I used to do that with a dirt car. I'd go dirt racing on Friday night and get home at like 3 or 4 a.m. and roll it out and have to push my drag car to the door of the trailer because I couldn't start it. My grandpa would call me and freak out. Yeah, and then drive to the racetrack, get there 6, 7 a.m. and sleep until time run started.
Yep.
Never. No way in hell.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
I find excuses for my son not to go race. He wants to go race a junior race that's 7 hours away for $150 to win. And I'm like, I'm not driving 7 hours for that. Like, it really, we're going to win anyway. It didn't matter, but it's just like, no, we're racing next weekend. You know what I mean?
Just give you $150 and act like we win?
Exactly. So the Houston race rained out last weekend, and he's telling me on Wednesday, he goes, Rockingham's having a big race and it's only 17 hours away, Dad. I am not going to Rockingham this weekend.
Oh, trust me. I wanted to go race Thanksgiving. I had Abilene, Monroe, Bowling Green, Vegas, and Tulsa I was looking at. And, of course, you know, Vegas has, like, the ultimate forecast, right? And then I look at it was 20 hours one way if I drove straight through, and I thought, you know, I don't really think I want to race that bad. I was going to go to Abilene until it canceled and then end up going to Tulsa.
Yeah. Yeah, everything around us canceled, so he didn't get to race. But, yeah, I think back in my younger days, I would have been like, yeah, let's load up. It doesn't matter what it pays or where we're going. Let's just go race somewhere. And now Dad needs a vacation, needs a week off every now and again.
Yes, sir. I'm with you.
All right, guys. Well, we have kept Mr. Kohotek on for about an hour and a half now, so we probably need to let him get to bed. And any last parting shots?
Yeah, past my bedtime.
Any parting shots, guys?
Well, I'll see you soon.
Y'all better be nice. Y'all have to work with me at some point again.
Yeah, you know. No, eventually.
That's why I said I'll see you soon.
Yep. No.
Eventually, Brian's happy. He gets to drive the Vega, and Jake does it. So.
Yeah, no. One day I'm going to ask you for your job, too, so I can't make you too pissed off. So.
You want to take my job now?
I don't know about right now, but, you know, one day maybe.
Yeah, can you fix it all first?
Yeah. Well, I thought I could fix it all, bro, but it's I'm not sure. I don't know there's a perfect deal. I really don't. I ain't saying Trey's got an easy job, but I mean it's tough. It just really is to, you know, it's tough to make one person happy, much less like a team finals when you got 15 tracks and 40 racers at each track. I mean, you know, I mean that's like you're talking about an impossible task now. That's an impossible task.
Yeah.
But no. But you don't have to make it fucking harder than it is.
True.
Because he does that. I've told him that to his face.
Well, I've told him too. I said, I don't even know why you bother making the schedule. What do you mean? I go, because you never follow it. So why do you even put one out there? You don't follow it. I mean, every time it's, you know, we're going to, as long as there's only 64 cars, we're going to run first round on Saturday night. But if ain't over 64 cars, and then he'll end up running the whole damn race on Saturday night. And I'm like, dude. I mean, seriously, why do you make a schedule?
Yeah.
I got that thing right there on my shirt.
Yeah. I had to pull back because when Dad was racing Division Four stuff for all those years, we'd roll into a points race on Friday night, make two time trials on Saturday, race on Sunday, and you go home. And there was tons of cars there.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it gets to where you take off on Thursday.
Yep.
You don't get to do anything but park. You might make one or two time trials on Friday. They're done by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then Saturday morning, it's like, oh, we're going to have one time trial and race, or we're just going straight into racing. We're going to finish it all up. But it's like taking off days of vacation, and I'm home at Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock because you want to be done. It's like, doesn't make sense. So you can't ever count on the schedule. So some of the races where it's like, well, if I get one time trial on Saturday morning, I'll go Friday night. I can make this race. Well, that wasn't even a given. So it just got to where we just don't race much of it anymore. But a lot of people still do, and it's still a good series, and it's just a matter of what you're looking to do. So,
yep, it's all in what you want to do. Some people like that. Some people don't. You know,
one thing I've learned, Frank, is that everything looks easy from the outside, so I don't question Trey I don't try not to question people that are doing these things because it's just like Drag Champ. I thought all these other magazines were lazy and just didn't want to do sportsman coverage or this and that, and then you get in there and you do it and you realize how hard things are, so – I mean, just like this podcast, it's hard putting up with Jake and Ryan every week. I mean, good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. You have no idea how much I know what you're talking about. I deal with both of them a lot. No, they're both good guys.
They are.
I don't have a problem with either one of them.
They're awesome. This podcast wouldn't exist without these two guys because I damn sure couldn't carry it. So
They both work hard making racers look good at what they do. Sometimes that's really a tough job, too.
Yeah,
but they will be the first one to burn your ass at the stake if you're racing and go 60 on the tree or something.
Hey, I also make them look really good at what they do because I'm usually in the other lane. Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
That's sometimes true.
I always tell Ryan when I'm going to race and he's the announcer, I said, "Dude, you better not out me if I miss a tree." I go, "You got to work with me again." Because I hear what he says about everybody else.
I'm like,
dude, how do you not get choked out or something?
The first race I ever worked with you, you were like, how have you not got beat up yet?
I don't know, people.
Because you're so lovable, likable.
Yeah, you know, yes.
Frank leaves the starting line.
He's going to fart in the mic every time you come up, Frank.
Oh.
I remember, Ryan, you were in the tower whenever he first heard that, and I thought he was going to fall out of the tower.
Oh, man. Well,
Frank, have a good night. Tell Tammy we said hey. We'll see you soon, and enjoy the nice warm weather in Texas because it's fucking snowing in Indiana.
Well, it's going to be 29 here tonight, so it's not too good tonight. But, yeah, I'm already missing the fall weather. We just skipped right from summer to winter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we just raced it nighttime during the summer.
You guys do a great job. I appreciate you.
We appreciate you, bud.
See you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Bye. Like, this is not going to be like the most like jarring podcast we've done, but there's a lot of good information in there.
Oh yeah, that was really good.
No, I mean, a lot of people come to these because Frank does help work a lot of the big money races now, and you know. They see him, they come, and they start yelling at him that all the newer guys don't know who he is. Like, that's former NHRA world champion fucking yelling at. Like, acting like he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's comical from our end to watch that sometimes. But no, Frank's a really good dude, and he's not afraid to let it fly. He'll tell you exactly what he feels, and that's what I appreciate about him, he's genuine.
You didn't hear it the first time, he'll say it again.
Oh, yeah.
But.
Well, he's definitely beat up on me and my old man in Super Gas many a day. So it's always fun racing with him, though. Good dude and very competitive. Still a pretty damn good driver today. So he's saying he's old, but he ain't forgot all those tricks yet.
No, he earned up a 50 Granger last year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, guys, the year is starting to wind down. Jake, how was Piedmont? Did you go to Piedmont?
Yeah.
He went for the door car race, yeah.
It was all right, I think.
That memorable, yeah. Huh?
Fourth or fifth round or something of the 20 grander.
Where were you racing?
Chevelle.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I went to Bowling Green last weekend and about crashed one of the Canadian, the brand new Diamond cars. So that's what's fresh in my mind right now.
Yeah, we already forgot about Piedmont. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, bad deal.
All right. I got nothing else, guys.
My racing year's done. I brought out the little cars this past weekend, and I'm rusty. Ooh.
Oh,
so
slot car time.
Yeah, is Santa this weekend?
I think it is this weekend.
Ooh, I might be going to Santa.
I will not be, but no, I got a little bit of work to do this week. But before we go off, we had someone in the Division 4 area that passed away from cancer this weekend. I really just want to give a shout out to Laney Maples. He's a really good dude. You might know his son better, Jeremy. Really solid dude. Doing anything, everybody. Every time I saw him, always had a smile on his face. Super, the dude was hilarious, and it's just really sad deal. So, really, if you're out there, send some prayers to the Maples family's way. I know Jeremy's taking it real hard. So,
yeah, I was unaware until just before the podcast. I was notified he had passed, and I'd raced, and my dad raced with Lanny since early '90s. So, known him for a long time, and good dude for sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'll see you guys next week. We got a good one next week.
We do.
Yeah, we're excited.
All right. We'll catch you then.
All right.
See you
later, guys.